SeatGeek is a proud sponsor of Fantasy Focus Baseball. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you are searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or just need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There is nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. We all have the SeatGeek app on our phones. By far the easiest way we have found to shop for tickets on more than one occasion this summer already, we have used that app to go to a baseball game, and we've had some good times. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals and to get you the most bang for your buck. SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, listeners of the Fantasy Focus Baseball get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase, so just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. But Will Smith had a really good June. Will Smith, the lefty, not the guy who sung about growing up in Philadelphia.
Well, here's a little story I'd like to...
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Hi there, and welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Monday morning, July 2nd, 2018. I am Eric. Joining us today is Mr. AJ Mass, researcher extraordinaire Kyle Soppe, editorial watchdog Leo Howe, who's probably just watching soccer right now, and producer Anthony Calatayude. Gentlemen, big weekend. It's July now. Man, you know, AJ, when we get to July, like, now I start to feel pressure in my baseball leagues. I'm like, all right, if I'm in sixth place, why? I mean, I don't feel that pressure as much in June. It's weird. Like, on the last day of July, in June you may not feel it, but on the first day of July, it just seems a little bit different because now it's like, all right, the All-Star breaks in like a week or two, and next month is a trading deadline, or is just all this crazy talk to you?
No, I think you hit that artificial, I mean, it's not artificial, but the halfway point of the season in terms of games played, and you get a whole bunch of think pieces about teams in real Major League Baseball who are, if they're not in first place by July 4th, then they're not making the playoffs. And I think it just kind of, we've been conditioned that at this point of the season we start thinking about taking stock. So us folks who've been doing this for a very long time and watching baseball for a very long time, I think we're just conditioned to turn the switch come July.
So what should we talk about today? We'll talk about some of the players that had a really big last week. Somebody had a really big Sunday night, hitting a bunch of home runs. The normal injuries, demotions, stuff like that. And a little bit later on, Kyle will speak up and tell us about the questions that you want answered. For now, here is the buzz. All right, let's start with Sunday Night Baseball because that was on ESPN and a great job they always do there. And somebody hit three home runs. So when I was looking into what to write about today, I thought, well, Aaron Hicks can't be rostered in that many ESPN fantasy leagues. Not having a great season. Only recently did he become like the leadoff hitter some of the time. Seven Yankees hitters are rostered in at least two-thirds of ESPN leagues. I can't recall seeing that before. And five of them are at least like 92%. It's obviously a fantastic lineup. But Aaron Hicks is kind of like sitting there as the potential leadoff hitter, and he hits three home runs. That's valuable, even in a points league.
Oh, sure, absolutely. I, before this outburst, had him ranked outside of my top 100, but, that's the playing time issue for him in terms of we don't know exactly how many bats he's going to get because the Yankees do tend to, whenever there's not a man-out situation, Hicks is the one who usually ends up getting pulled at some point. Certainly, he's been playing a lot more this year, and he's been performing very well. So I don't know why he wouldn't buy in, especially where counting stats matter as opposed to the points league stuff, because he's putting up the counting stats and he probably will continue to do so anytime he's in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, he and Brett Gardner were the two guys last season who had double digits in home runs and stolen bases. Gardner is rostered in most every league, and then there's Hicks just sitting there, and durability's never been a strength for him or Greg Bird, who's the other Yankees hitter that I think is interesting, though he has not hit well over the past month. But Aaron Hicks has out-homered every other Yankee over the past 30 days and has the most runs scored. He's actually the number seven player over the past 30 days on the ESPN Player Raiders, so he seems like he's a good guy to get now until he gets hurt. But if a guy's going to give you, like, 15 homers and 10 steals in half a season, that's a great opportunity to go out and find another outfielder to do it when Hicks is on the DL, which I like.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the other thing with the Yankees, I mean, you were saying how impressive the lineup is. I mean, I can't imagine pitchers being able to stay up for the entire length of the lineup. I mean, if you really got to, you know, buckle down, you know, really focus when Judge is at the plate and Stanton's at the plate, you're going to relax a little bit when it's Aaron Hicks. And, you know, that's going to play into him perhaps getting a pitch that's a little bit hung out there. So, you know, I'm not surprised when Hicks gets the benefit of all the power bats in the lineup behind him.
Any interest in Greg Bird before he gets hot? Because I'm looking closer at his numbers. This is not about strikeout rate. It's not really about contact. Obviously, he plays in a terrific home ballpark for his skill set, which is pulling left-handed, you know, home runs. Greg Bird seems to me like a guy who may never hit 280, but that's a 30 home run bat just kind of lurking in a deep lineup.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's outside my top 150 by a little bit in terms of hitters. So, yeah, I'm skeptical in points leagues because there is that high strikeout rate, and it's going to factor in. He doesn't walk nearly enough to counteract that, but. You know, the doubles that he's going to hit, if he gets, you know, half of those doubles turned into home runs, you know, with the power is there. You know, I expect double-digit home runs from him the rest of the way, and it could be as many as 20 if some of those doubles get that, you know, eat that extra bite of cereal in the morning, a little sweet potato hash browns and all that good stuff.
What are your thoughts on David Price? That was an ugly effort. 5 home runs allowed. We don't like to see that from our fantasy pitchers. It was the Yankees. They have the most home runs and the highest OPS against left-handed pitching this season, and it's not particularly close. But David Price scares me. I finally traded him away in my last league that I had shares of him last week. I didn't get much for him. There was also contracts and prices involved there, and I got Joe Adell, the Angels prospect, basically. What are your thoughts on him? Because his next outing is against Kansas City. And James Paxton just, you know, fooled with them yesterday. Anybody would. The Royals lineup is terrible. So Price, his next outing is probably going to be very good. Is he a guy you want to invest in, or do you want to trade him away?
Well, I think it's one of those things where you, if he's on your roster, you keep him on the roster. If he's not on your roster, you certainly don't go out and get him. You get those situations all the time. I mean, he's been really bad against the Yankees. He hasn't been that bad against anybody else. You know, maybe the Rangers roughed him up a little bit in the start, but he's done okay against the teams he's supposed to do okay against. So I'm not selling on him if I have him, but I'm not rushing out to pick him up either. Though, like you said, the matchup against Kansas City is pretty good.
I'm worried about the health. I mean, he had the hand thing for, you know, whatever reason playing Fortnite. I mean, you know, look around our office at ESPN. If you could get injured playing Fortnite, half our office would be on the DL. And then you've got... You know, the elbow from last year, which was never really fixed, I just don't think he's making more than 25, 26 starts. So that's the other thing I'm concerned about with him. A couple other lefties got roughed up. They're actually on the real-life trade block, Jay Happ, Cole Hamels. Jay Happ's having a really good year. That was just kind of a bad day against a team he shouldn't have been lit against. Cole Hamels is not having a good year. It's a lot of home runs. I'm concerned about him. Last year was the K rate. If either of these guys or both get traded, are you more interested after they get? I mean, obviously, Cole Hamels out of Texas would be more interesting, but I still think he would get hit.
Yeah, I mean, Cole Hamels is obviously in the twilight of his career, and he hasn't been the same pitcher of late, and it shows. I mean, and he's still good enough to be on rosters, matchup play, streamer play, certainly. A guy like Happ, I think he does benefit from the location, you know, playing pitching in Toronto, getting some run support. But it'd be interesting to see where he ends up. I mean, if he ends up, I can't even imagine, like, you know, I was going to say, if he ends up in a really nice pitcher's park, you know, like City Field. No, that's not happening. but, you know, if he ends up in a place where he's maybe, you know, going to get the number 4 pitcher in a matchup constantly, then yeah, you know, he can get some wins just on the basis of pitching against some of these openers and call-ups and rest day guys.
Top players of the last week, 4 of them are middle infield eligible. Alex Bregman, who's just awesome, and I've been saying since early last year he would be awesome. It took a little while. Javier Baez, who doesn't take any walks, but he's still awesome. Rougned Odor, interesting guy. He's the only guy in this top 5, along with Nicholas Castellanos and Addison Russell, who is really available in that many leagues. I'm not a fan of Odor. He does tend to hit for power and steal bases when he wants. He has 3 stolen bases in the past week alone. But that batting average, even now at 241, it could drop 40 points soon. He does not take walks. Are you adding Rougned Odor now, or are you scared?
No, you know, there's so many options available in the middle infield that I don't see the need, unless you are, you're in one of these situations where I need steals and you think he's going to continue to give you them, then maybe you take a chance for him while he's hot. But like you said, he's just as likely to jump 20 points as he did since June 24th, then dropped right back down. So when the average is that low, it's real easy to jump up.
So if you had your choice, you had to pick up one hitter for this week, if anybody's listening before game starts, it's today, and it's Odor or Avisail Garcia of the White Sox. He's an outfielder, so you don't get the middle infield eligibility, but in 9 games since coming off the disabled list, he gets a hit in every game. He scored a run per game. He's hit 3 home runs. He's not going to steal bases, but he bats in the middle of a lineup, which is actually a little underrated. Garcia or Odor, if it's like your utility spot?
Yeah, I'm going Garcia. I like Garcia. Obviously, you know, I drafted him, and, you know, obviously after April, I didn't really have a chance to use him. But I think that, you know, again, injury risk, sure. But as long as he's in there, I think he's got some favorable matchups, and I think I would probably rather have him. I just trust him a lot more than Odor. I mean, the same thing with Profar. Like, there's guys who just, they're hot for a while, and everybody says, well, maybe now's the time when they're finally, these young players are going to turn things around, and they don't.
Top pitchers of the week, no surprise, Blake Snell at Tampa, who's having a fantastic season. He will be an all-star. And James Paxton at Seattle. So I ask you this. There was a top four starting pitchers that we reviewed at the beginning of the season, and Verlander got into that crew, and I think Severino for me has. How close are Snell and Paxton for you? Where do you rank them? You know, it's amazing to me that Boston and the Yankees get each win like 105, 110 games. One of them's going to have to face, I think, James Paxton in that one-game playoff, and they could easily lose that game. That's a fantastic theme here to wait for. But what are your thoughts on Snell and Paxton? Are they top 10 guys for you now?
No, I am not sold on Snell at all. I mean, as much as I've been the Rays whisperer of late, I think he's gotten lucky. More than he's been good, and I'm not buying into it. I mean, you look at his strand rate is over 80%. BABIP is really low, and the regression is just it's gonna come. So I am very concerned with him. Whereas with Paxton, I buy it. I think the numbers are in line with what I expected of him, and so if I have to pick between the two, it's not even a question here. Paxton gets the nod.
Now, you realize that we have a Rays fan who's listening live to the show. He's actually our editorial watchdog. It's halftime of the Brazil game, so he's actually listening now. You know, you may not be around the next show. I'm just saying, if you rip on Rays, something could change here.
Yeah, you know what? I think
Eric,
that
you're gone.
I was going to say, I
you
think
didn't
that
hear
there's
my,
some
my run last week.
I think there's some guy named Tristan who I might throw in for the next show just to mix things up.
When is our next show? Are we doing a show Thursday? By the way,
I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, all right. Well, look, if we tweet out that we did a show on Thursday, then you'll know we did a show. July 4th, obviously, is Wednesday, and please be careful when you're grilling and doing fireworks and whatever else. Let's get on to the transactions of the past couple days. Carlos Correa, the Astros, on the DL with lower back soreness. If you've got Correa in a league and you're trying to win this year, AJ, are you concerned, or are you thinking this is just 10 days, no big deal?
Well, I'm always concerned with my guys, no doubt. I'm hoping it's no big deal. You know, hopefully you were smart enough to have the Marvin Gonzalez insurance policy so that, you know, you just get his stats and write it out. And even if it is something more serious, not that Gonzalez is as good, but he's not bad. He's a pretty good sub there. So I don't think you'd be hurt if you were prepared for this eventuality. Plus middle infield, like we said, there's a lot of options out there.
There really are. I mean, it seems to me like when I lose a first baseman, you know, it's almost harder to find a reliable first baseman than it is like somebody from my middle infield spot. I mean, there's just plenty of guys out there. You can get stolen bases out there. Anyway, and Marwin Gonzalez.
Jason Kipnis is still out there in so many leagues, and he's doing pretty well recently. I mean, I'm not saying that it's going to continue, but there are guys to be had at the middle infield spot.
And I feel like when we talk about, between you and me, we do a weekly free agent piece every Thursday, and we talk about the available players, and there's not a whole lot of movement. And the reason there isn't, I think, is because people don't need to pick up a lot of free agents. You know, I mean, there either is a lot of injuries or just not a lot of movement. So, like, Enrique Hernandez, who's proving to hit for power against everybody now, not just lefties, still available in more than 60% of leagues. Jose Peraza, who can steal bases out there. Addison Russell is available in 70% of ESPN leagues, Odor's out there. There's probably Kipnis, as you mentioned, 82% availability right now. So, and Jorge Polanco of the Twins, who I don't know if we've discussed him at all this year after the 80-game suspension. I think he's coming back this week, I read somewhere. Maybe it was on Twitter, so I know it's true. And he's got some pop, you know. He got in the middle of that lineup, and he put up some numbers last season. And Jorge Polanco is available in only 97% of ESPN leagues. Paul DeJong could be back for the Cardinals this week. There's a lot of guys out there that you can pick up. What else here? Lorenzo Cain of the Brewers could be back this week when eligible on Wednesday. Though he does face, potentially, it's Cleveland and Boston. Trevor Bauer, Chris Sale, David Price, Rick Porcello this week. So that's not much fun. So I think I might leave Lorenzo Cain on my bench this week. Even if he comes back on Wednesday, that's quite a pitching.
Well, yeah, and especially because to hear Lorenzo Cain say it, he thinks he'll be ready to come back on Wednesday when he's eligible. I don't like it when players are I think I can come back. I'd rather him say, oh, I'll be back. Even if he's lying, at least it says to me that he at least is going to try and convince his manager to activate him. And that scares me.
Odd situation with the Rockies this week. John Gray, who we discussed probably too much for a pitcher with an ERA of 5.77 on this show, major strikeout guy. He has been for a couple of years now. Obviously, has struggled a little bit more this year, and it's not about command or control. I mean, his strikeout rate is really high. He's not allowing home runs. He's not walking people, but now he's doing it at AAA and probably in a worse environment for pitchers than Denver's Coors Field. What do you make of this with John Gray? If they wanted to do what, like, the Twins did with Miguel Sano, putting him in single-A so he's out of the pressure and, you know, and out of, like, a similar ballpark, I could have understood that. This seems almost punitive. Do you want to keep John Gray in a deeper league, or do you want to move on?
You know, it's hard to cut a guy who's doing so well in terms of strikeouts in counting, you know, if you have counting stats where it matters. I know the ratios that he's been killing you, but you knew what you were buying in there with a Rockies pitcher. I mean, you didn't know you were getting a +5 ERA, certainly, but I think in this case, he's a guy who you knew what you were bargaining for. So there's a chance he could come back, certainly, especially if it is punitive or you know, something like that. I mean, we're not going to know, but there's a chance for redemption, certainly more so than if it's an injury thing where you never know when the guy's going to come back. But it's scary that a pitcher who's, you know, opening day starters aren't supposed to be sent down in the middle of the season. I know it happens, but it's amazing how quickly his star has fallen with the team.
And I think it's important to note here, because when you think of Rockies pitcher, obviously the obvious is home road splits. In his career, home road splits are pretty similar for ERA, and over the past two seasons, he's been much better at home than he has been on the road. So this is not just about a pitcher who struggles in the thin air of Denver. It's about a pitcher who's struggling in road games as well. I bet he's back right after the All-Star break. I wouldn't be surprised if his ERA after the All-Star break was 350. So there's obviously a major kid guy here.
Unless Antonio Sensatella comes up and, like, you know, throws seven perfect innings or something, and really makes a name for himself to make him go, yeah, why do we need that great guy? So certainly they'll give him some time down there. He will be back at some point, I think, but it may not be soon if he's not really taking it mentally well down there and Sensatella is filling in nicely.
The real streamers on the Rockies rotation, Chad Bettis and Tyler Anderson, a combined 9-1 in road games with an ERA just above 3, good whip, not a whole lot of strikeouts, but there are streamers for the Rockies. John Gray just has not been one of them. Let's talk about the relievers. It's a closer carousel.
The closer carousel.
All right, what do we got here? Sergio Romo of Tampa Bay, available in more than 80% of ESPN standard leagues. He's getting a lot of saves. He's become their main closer now at this point. What would we need to see more here to make Romo rostered in more leagues, make him a top 20 closer? I mean, Tampa Bay plays a lot of close games because they don't score a ton of runs. This has been part of their history, really. Sergio Romo is going to probably end up with more than 20 saves.
Absolutely. They tried him as the opener, and he was doing well there. And I said, you know, he's doing so well with this one inning. Let's put him in the back. I wouldn't be surprised if they suddenly put him back as an opener for a little while at some point, just because you never know with Tampa Bay. But why not? Why not pick this guy up? I mean, like I was been saying all last week, I have a lot more confidence in the Rays bullpen than I do with the Mets bullpen. And so, you know, with a guy like Familia, I want nothing to do with. I'd rather with a guy who's performing well.
All right, Toronto's going with Tyler Clippard as their closer for the next 4 weeks until Roberto Osuna is eligible to pitch again. Ryan Tepera is out with elbow inflammation. That does not sound good to me. So Clippard would be the guy. San Francisco, I think it's Sam Dyson, but Will Smith had a really good June. Will Smith, the lefty, not the guy who sung about growing up in Philadelphia. Which bullpen here is, do you view the San Francisco and Toronto bullpens as you do the Mets, or are you investing in pitchers here?
Well, here's a little story I like to I think San Francisco's bullpen has been flipped right upside down, and it's one of these things where you don't know who's going to pitch in any given situation. I think they want Melanson to like take it over, but every time he gets a chance, he starts to struggle, and so I think it really is going to be one of these situations where you just could be Dyson, could be Watson, could be Smith, could be Melanson. Like I don't know where that's going to end up. They're not bad options. They're just not consistent options, and that's going to be confusing going forward.
All right, let's talk about some hitters who had homers and steals. It's the combo meals.
Hey, it's a combo meal! Combo! Combo! It's a combo meal! Home run plus steal!
Looks like we have three of them since our last show. Trey Turner of Washington and Keon Broxton back from the minors on Friday night. And then on Sunday, Corey Dickerson of Pittsburgh, not a likely guy to do so. Trey Turner found out this weekend that Jorge Alfaro of the Phillies has a really good arm and throws really fast and hard. I just can't believe it. I mean, if Alfaro could just hit a little bit more, I mean, what a monster overall. I mean, the way he throws out runners. Trey Turner's still great. And Trey Turner's having a fine season. People still complain about him not being a top 10 guy. He's on his way to like 18 homers and 45 steals. Stop complaining about Trey Turner, please.
Boo-hoo-hoo.
Exactly. We could do a lot worse. You know, there's a lot of guys out there who aren't doing anything. How about Broxton, though? Brewers didn't want him on the team this year. They had way too many outfielders. They're not even playing Braun regularly. And then Broxton, they had to call him up because injuries to Kane and Yelich and Santana being demoted, and now Broxton's playing great again. It's probably not going to last. Would you even, like, recommend Broxton as a pickup for this week, or do you think it won't even last this week?
I don't even think it lasted this weekend, to be honest with you. He had two good games. It's all flashy to get two home runs and steal a base and combo meal and all that stuff. And then he went 0-7 Saturday, Sunday. So I'm just, he's Keon Broxton.
And Corey Dickerson, by the way, had a terrible June. That high batting average went down. He hit one home run in June. Actually, he didn't hit any in June. The home run came on July 1st. Had a really bad June, and that's kind of Corey Dickerson in a nutshell. Very streaky like that. He has six homers in the season, batting .296. He'll probably end up with like 14 homers and batting .260. Is that great? I don't think so. So move on from Corey Dickerson. You probably already did that in June. Let's take a look at the schedule here for the next couple of days. Lots of games, and there are day games on the schedule. So if you're listening, you probably aren't before the games actually start. Because there's one 1 o'clock game, and then there should be more day games than this. But on ESPN tonight, wow, look at this pitching matchup. Cy Young winners of late, Rick Porcello of Boston. Did he win a Cy Young, Kyle?
Fine.
Did he or didn't he?
You're putting him in the same sentence as Scherzer. I'm not okay with that.
I have to. He's facing him. And by the way, your guy just walked somebody while I was speaking.
Only
he's not
three.
Even pitching today, and he still walked
Only
the guy.
Three the other day. Baby steps.
Only three. Really? That's what we're doing now?
I see what you did there. Baby steps.
Yeah,
very
see?
Nice.
Like that? Father Chatwood, we're making moves here.
Oh, come on. I'm not saying Porcello was Max Scherzer. Scherzer's a monster. But I'll ask you this, AJ. Do you have concerns about using a pitcher like Scherzer when he's facing Boston or the Yankees or the Astros? I, frankly, would never sit Max Scherzer, even if it's a Coors Field. But what are your thoughts on this matchup? Because Washington did not hit this weekend except for one game in Philadelphia where they scored 17. They didn't hit the rest of the weekend. They didn't hit any of the Phillies' awful relievers. I'm a little worried about Daniel Murphy looks terrible. Bryce Harper looks awful. He's out of my top 20. I think Porcello is actually a pretty good guy to use today.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a short schedule, so certainly you get that involved here. There are not as many options as you might have. But, you know, it is a Scherzer day. It is a Bumgarner day. It is a Kluber day. It is a Robbie Ray day. I don't think I have to go with Porcello here, even though I agree with you that it's a better matchup than it might normally be. But I'm not sitting any of those guys if I have them. Not a chance.
It's also a Nick Kingham and Anibal Sanchez day, and you might scoff at that. But Sanchez has actually pitched really well for Atlanta. I don't know how. And Kingham back from the minor leagues where he should never have been in the first place this season. He's not an ace, but he's probably like a borderline top 50 fantasy starter if they just leave him alone. Either of these guys pique your interest?
Maybe Kingham, because he's coming back, and the positive mental state of coming back after a demotion is always a good thing. I can see him. I mean, the Dodgers are a solid matchup against him, so he might not do more than a 6-3 quality start, but sure, why not?
Sanchez is facing the Yankees at the stadium, and Jonathan Loaiziga, who I saw in person last week, pitched fine. I would not use Sanchez against the Yankees. It'd have to be like I don't want to say just like, bottom line top 30 or 40 starter to use against the Yankees. It depends on who it is and how they're pitching. But man, that lineup is so deep. And if they're getting production out of Hicks and like their fourth string catcher, I mean, come on. Tuesday, what do we got here? Shane Bieber of Cleveland is very interesting to me. He's a must add facing the Royals, a team that did not score at all anymore. But what's Bieber's upside to you? He doesn't walk anybody. He's going to give up hits. But against the Royals, he probably won't do much of anything wrong.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And he's got that nice little protection in there is that, you got Kluber before and Bauer after. He almost becomes an afterthought for other teams. And so he sits in a nice little nook there. It's quite a staff they have there in Cleveland.
Wednesday, July 4th. Please be safe out there. There is a morning game at Washington, 11:05 a.m. Eastern time. You've been warned. It's Eduardo Rodriguez and Eric Fetty. I'd use Eduardo Rodriguez. He pitched well until his last outing. I guess that was against the Yankees, though. And they just destroy lefties. Three games on ESPN on Wednesday the 4th. We've got the Orioles at the Phillies. Aaron Nola, who's become a top 10 starting pitcher, facing someone named David Hess. The next game after that, Dylan Covey of the White Sox, who did not pitch well in his last outing, as kind of predictable, against the Reds and Sal Romano, Connecticut's own. And then the very late night game, the Cardinals in Arizona, Miles Mikolas against Patrick Corbin. So one guy gets a lot of strikeouts in Corbin, and Mikolas is having a really good season. What were your expectations of Mikolas coming back from across the over there in Asia, and we didn't know what he was going to do. And the first time he was in the United States, didn't look like such a great pitcher. Not a big strikeout guy at all. He's a command guy. Is he a guy you're selling on?
Yeah, I probably am selling on simply because I just don't know exactly what to expect from such a long season. We haven't seen him do that. I mean, you're never going to get better value for him than right now. Trade deadline. Get him. The closer you get to the trade deadline, you're going to have people with other options, people moving teams. Like, now is the time to cut Mikolas for some really talent that I expect might be doing well into September. Like I said, I don't know if he can last an entire season because the workload is just so different in America than it is overseas.
Today's Hash Browns brought to you by Ballpark Buns. If you're not out grilling, someone is out grilling you, and that's why you need Ballpark Buns in your lineup. It's like having a number one draft pick at every backyard barbecue. After all, Ballpark hot dog and hamburger buns rank as America's favorite buns, delivering fresh taste and outstanding flavor with every bite. Head over to ballparkbuns.com to see the whole roster, from Ballpark's golden hamburger and hot dog buns baked with a touch of honey to the oversized tailgaters, gourmet hamburger, and brat buns that really let you pile on the flavor. Need a home run recipe to spark your grilling genius? Well, ballparkbuns.com has got you covered there, too, with recipes for zesty blue cheeseburgers, hearty chili cheese dogs, guacamole turkey burgers, and so much more. We've also got a blog full of tips and tricks to level up your grilling game and tailgating talent. Get all this goodness and more, including the Ballpark Buns product finder, at ballparkbuns.com. That's ballparkbuns.com, home of America's favorite buns. Yes, I might be doing some grilling on July 4th. Really, any day is good to grill.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a great day to do it if you're hanging out with family, friends, all that stuff. But grill every day, especially in the summer.
You look like a griller to me, Leo. You look like somebody who's grilled a few.
I like to enjoy the products of grilling more than I like to grill, but I've been known to grill.
So you don't want to really do the work is what you're saying.
Yeah, basically. Right. That's why I'm more of a watchdog and less of a host.
I'll invite you over to my grilling party. How about that?
Oh, yeah. I love that drive down the Jersey Turnpike.
Oh, it's fun. All right, Kyle, I'm sure there's many questions today that people want answers to after the long weekend, so let's give them some answers.
Of course. S. Will wants to know if he can put Jose Ramirez ahead of Bryce Harper in his personal dynasty ranks. He's been wanting to do it for a while and wants to know if you can finally pull the trigger on it.
I want to see what AJ thinks of Harper, because I've watched him a lot, and AJ, he plays in the same division as your favorite team, too. He just looks terrible to me. He doesn't get a lot of singles. They can blame it on the shifting all they want, and that's been a popular theme over the past couple of weeks. It's not unfair to lefties. Hit it somewhere else. He's hitting up for power, not getting any singles. It's a lot of walks, but he's not stealing bases. Doesn't look like a big contract push to me. Harper, I would rather have Jose Ramirez now in my dynasty and for this year. What say you?
Yeah, well, for this year, certainly, I have Ramirez ranked number 3 the rest of the way versus 18 for Harper. That's certainly one stock going up, one stock going down. You know, before the season started, it was pretty darn close between them in my dynasty rankings. Really, they were back-to-back. I had Harper slightly ahead. It's your personal rankings, S. Will. Put Ramirez ahead. There's no crying in that. And, you know, don't drop Harper to, like, 150, but I can see Ramirez going ahead of him, sure.
But where should Harper be ranked based on what he's doing now, and why do we give him a pass? Like, he's capable of winning a batting title. He's capable of hitting 50 home runs. He's also, as we've seen, capable of batting 240, or what he's doing this season. He's a big walker. He knows which pitches to swing at. But we have no idea from year to year about the batting average or the stolen bases. And to me, that's a problem, because I want a consistent player. So, like, even if I'm comparing him now to some of the first basemen out there, like, I can't make a case for Harper over, like, Freeman or Rizzo or Votto anymore.
No, I hear you, and it's all related to the batting average, quite frankly. I mean, the strikeout to walk ratio doesn't seem too far out of whack with what he's done in the past. Obviously, the power is there. I mean, he's pretty much on pace for a career high in home runs, so what are we worried about? It is the everything else that he's doing. It's not going to take much for him to get back on track, though. So I think the optimism there is that it seems to be only the singles that's an issue here. It's a weird situation. It's weird. I don't think that his numbers are that different. Put him on pace to last year's numbers. Compare them. The only difference is the batting average. It's weird.
Over the last month or so, he's been swinging a lot more pitches in the zone. He's still taking his walks. Pitcher's obviously very careful with him. Would it surprise me if he bats 300 in July? No, of course not. He's certainly capable of doing that. It's just, man, this has been like 3 months now where he's kind of, well, not three, but like 2.5 months where he's kind of struggled. Anyway, moving on. What else we got, Kyle?
Bryce Harper's already got one fewer walk than he had in 30 more games last year.
Part of that is him. Part of that is the pitchers not wanting to pitch to him. Part of that now, I think, is Daniel Murphy. I mean, we're watching Juan Soto bat third and Harper fifth. That's amazing. Could you have even thought about that 5 weeks ago when Soto was in not even AAA? Wasn't he in AA? I mean, Rendon's great. Soto looks great to me. I'm actually mad. Soto got traded in our office league, and I didn't get a shot at him. I've got like 5 or 6 closers, and Tristan dealt them. Was it to you, Leo?
Yeah, that one was to me.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And all I need is
I mean, and Harper's hard hit percentage is higher than it's ever been in his career. So what do you make of that too? You know, it's weird.
It's weird. It's a 223 BABIP, but I'm starting to think that lefty pull hitters are going to have BABIPs of like 250 or less because they keep hitting into shifts, you know? So,
yeah.
All right. Yeah. Next.
It's a nice transition from you, Mr. Carabao. Chris is wondering about Juan Soto. He's got him in a redraft league and wants to know what he can get for him. Maybe if you guys could play a name game with players that you would trade for Juan Soto.
Everybody wants to hear a name game.
Hidely hodly.
Diddly doolittle. What?
The dilly of a pickle.
Diddly doodly Ned Flanders.
Dilly wall.
The dilly of a pickle.
I say diddly doodly da da da.
The dilly of a pickle. We can't do the drop.
With all the dillilopoly delight birds.
It's a dilly of a pickle. Come on.
Dibbly dibbly do. Whatever, you know.
That's an even dillier of a pickle.
You just dilly dallied your way into another thing.
Got a name for you. I'm Sultan of Stat.
Bro Stat.
Dog Stat.
I have kids of Stat.
Hamster of Stat.
Wife Stat.
Goldfish of Stat.
Mrs. of Stat.
Something's wrong with you.
I want to play a little game of Trash Tristan here.
Tristan, trash is Tristan. Yeah, it all went bad.
Are you singing that? We're having an intervention. Yeah, something's wrong with him. He needs a vacation. I see in your last rankings, and these are for points leagues, you've got Soto as your number 31 outfielder, which I think is fair. I could make a case for him top 20, but I want to see a little bit more, of course. And the other thing about Soto is he's not going to help you in stolen bases. So it's basically power, batting average. He should score plenty of runs, especially if he keeps batting third. The batting average, though, I mean, is he a 300 hitter to you? Because this is still a very inflated batting average on balls in play. But it's look at the walks and strikeouts. Very few hit. I mean, when's the last time we saw a 19-year-old hitter? I don't know if we ever have, with this kind of plate discipline. So I think he actually can hit close to 300.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how how pitchers adjust to him. It's right in that book, and so far so good for him. But come the All-Star break is over, and we see pitchers and teams face him, for the second or third time. Maybe he suffers a little bit there, but I don't think this is a guy who's getting 300 by luck and is suddenly going to hit 240. It's 270 maybe, 280, and by the time the season's over, it'll adjust to somewhere in that range, 285.
So this is a name game, but if I ask you, for players, all you have to do is look at your rankings. You've got Soto ahead of Nomar Mazara, which I think is interesting because Mazara has proven himself to be a power hitter at this point who hits for a decent batting average, and you've got Soto ahead of him. I guess it would only be about players you've moved since your last update there. Soto versus, Joey Gallo. I think that's an interesting one because I think Soto will hit for power, not as much as Gallo, but he's a lot safer for batting average. So why do you have Gallo ahead?
Yeah, part of it is playing time. Does Soto play every day, and does that hurt him at the big league level to some extent in terms of, like I said, the pitchers getting the book on him? Whereas Gallo has been through that adjustment process. We know who he is. We know what stats he's going to get. If Gallo doesn't strike out at the ridiculously insane rate that he strikes out, then he shoots way up the rankings. To me, the only negative with Gallo, because batting average does not matter to me. It's the strikeouts. And if he can keep that even somewhat in check, his ceiling is way higher than Soto.
And that's an excellent point, because in traditional Roto leagues, non-points, like I do the most in, I would take Soto over quite a few of the outfielders that you have ranked here. I don't know if I have Soto in my top 20. I got to check that, or maybe I'll move him close to that. But in points leagues, batting average does not matter. So Chris Davis, well, both of them, but really the Oakland one, is a lot more valuable in a points league. He'll take his walks. His batting average doesn't matter. You've got Yoenis Cespedes over Soto and Mitch Haniger, which I cannot tell you why I would do the same. I have had enough of Cespedes. And I don't see him coming back anytime soon for the lowly Mets either. He doesn't want to be a part of the losing. They're obviously not playoff bound. You still believe in Cespedes? That's an interesting one for me.
Well, I haven't updated it yet this week. I'm about to do that today, probably. It's one of these things where when they get hurt, you drop them a lot, and then you slowly start to bring them up, and then you realize they're not coming back, and you start dropping them again. He's not staying this high. There's not a lot of support in the lineup for him anyway. And like you said, he's a head case. When he doesn't want to play, he doesn't perform. And that is an issue there. It's hard to quantify that in rankings when you try to take the names off the back of the uniforms, but it is something you do have to factor in.
We've seen, speaking of Mets, we've seen things change quickly for Brandon Nimmo. The power has stopped. Batting average has gone down. Michael Conforto with the shoulder. I just think it's going to be a lost season for him. Do you feel that Conforto can be the guy next year that we thought he was going to be this year, or do you think that shoulder injury is going to just cause him pain for the rest of his career?
It's one of these situations where a change of scenery is probably just best for him at this point. The Mets are going to clean house, and I hope that clean house does not involve Jake DeGrom, but, who knows at this point. Sometimes you just need to move. I mean, Matt Harvey's done fairly well since he moved to Cincinnati, and Devin Mesoraco has done well in New York. I think sometimes you just need a change of scenery and a fresh start, and I think Conforto might be one of these guys that typically, with the Mets, comes up with huge expectations. Last things, millage, anyone? and if they can go to the right situation somewhere else, maybe they can do better. Jeremy Burnett, didn't do so bad elsewhere.
All right, Kyle, what's next?
Zach, noting the recent streak from Bregman, wants to know if there's a chance he's the best player on the Astros roster. Where does he, Altuve, and Correa rank for you in dynasty ranks?
I love Bregman. I think what I view Bregman as, and I did this early last season, I viewed him as a guy who would eventually be 25 homers and 20 steals. And I think the power is just coming on even faster. He's got 5 homers in the past week alone, 10 runs batted in, and a couple stolen bases. Entrenched as the number 2 hitter, eligible at short and third. Jose Altuve is older, and you worry about his power in the next couple of years. Correa versus Bregman in a dynasty. What would you say to that one? I feel like they're both going to be like 20-20 options that could hit 30 home runs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, shortstop is loaded in terms of these rankings. I mean, I had my shortstop before the season started at Turner, Correa, Lindor, Bregman. Those are my top four. So is the gap between Bregman and Correa closer? Probably, but probably not enough to move him above four right now. But, you know, I'll reevaluate when the season's over. I hate changing dynasty rankings during the season because so much can change in offseason.
That's fair. I do think, though, that Correa is not going to be somebody who steals bases. Like, I'd be a little surprised if he even got to double digits this year. I'm not saying Bregman's a burner who's going to steal 25. But Bregman, to me, can contribute mid to high teens every year if he wanted to. I don't think Correa is going to do that. So I think I can make a case here, a pretty good case, that I'd rather have Bregman in a dynasty. I don't rank Bregman above Correa right now, though. And with this injury, I think I might switch them. Because you're right, back injuries can linger for a while. And one of them isn't stealing base. Not like Bregman's stealing a ton, but I've loved Bregman since he got drafted. I love Swanson, too. And Swanson just is not that guy. Bregman is that guy. Who was he compared to? Somebody was comparing him to like a 30-20 guy recently for like a shortstop. And I was like, wow. I mean, 30 home runs for Alex Bregman. I didn't expect 30. But he's at 16 halfway through the season. So maybe he can get there. Amazing.
And on top of that, you know, you do have this, you know, symbiotic relationship between the two that, you know, when one does well, it kind of supports the other stats to some regard. So it's kind of hard to separate the two from each other.
Bregman, the number 33 option on the season player rare, which is pretty impressive. And among hitters alone, he's 18. So
is the peak of his value mid-2000s Jimmy Rollins?
Maybe that was the comp. You know, he's just so different than him, though.
Yeah, I think you'd probably flip the power and speed, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see Bregman being a guy who steals 20 bases every year. But I think he develops into a 30-home run guy. He's probably doing that right now. Man, shortstop is just deep. Deep position. Do you see the defensive numbers on Manny Machado? I was reading that over the weekend, because obviously Baltimore should trade him this month. If they were smart, I don't think they are, but if they were smart, they would move Machado. And Machado's numbers at shortstop are dismal. He's like the worst defensive shortstop based on metrics. He's hitting. He's fine. He's the number 12 hitter for the season.
He's there to hit. I mean, you know, and like you said, the Orioles, well, we can finish 50 games out of first place with you. We can finish 50 games out of first place without you.
And somebody I know what it was. Somebody on Twitter said to me, is Scott Kingery the next Alex Bregman? And you can paint obvious things here. Short third, the way they look, their skill set to some degree. Hey, I would love it if Scott Kingery has Alex Bregman's skill set and could be a 30-homer, 20-steal guy. I don't see that yet. I don't see Kingery as, like, a 20-homer guy anytime soon. I think he's got some pop. I think he's got more speed. I see him as, like, a 15-homer, 25-steal guy when he hits his apex probably in a year or two. I can see Kingery doing that. But Bregman,
yeah, let's become the next Jed Lowry first, and then we'll worry about moving up higher on the chart.
Fair enough. Next.
Last question of the day comes about Tyler Skaggs. He's rattled off five straight starts where he's pitched at least five innings and not allowed more than one earned run. He's only one of five pitchers to do that this season. He's available in over 20% of leagues. Do you think he's got staying power in most fantasy formats?
A lot of strikeouts, 100 Ks and 92 innings. He just recently missed a start. Was that his forearm, his elbow, hamstring? Oh, it was his hamstring, so I'm not worried at all about it. Man, I mean, you know, we don't have a whole lot to go on with Tyler Skaggs. He had the Tommy John surgery, of course, didn't he? Or was it I think it was Tommy John. But he's never pitched more than 113 innings in six major league seasons. And he's closing in on that. And, man, that
staying
home run
power.
Rate is low.
Does he have the state power?
I saw that had a thing, so there's a little Barry for you. I think, you know, what's weird is that he's been starting on the road and not at home. So I'm curious to see what he does when he gets the pitch once again in Anaheim. It's weird that six of the last seven starts have been on the road.
It is. I mean, when I look closer at his numbers, I see a strand rate, which is through the roof. But I also don't think of him as a 264 ERA guy. I think a Skaggs is like a 350 ERA guy. Now, if he ends up at 350, that means he's going to get lit up here. I see a lot of strikeouts. Like, Some might say, is this the next Robbie Ray, a left-handed strikeout guy? Finally found health and command, and it's all good. I don't see that. But are you selling?
I don't really see the long-term put him in your lineup and just leave him there kind of upside here. I think he's still a matchups play. So if someone's going to be willing to overpay for him, sure.
Skaggs or Freddie Peralta in Milwaukee?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Peralta started yesterday, got lit in the first inning. Actually, he gave up 3 runs, loaded the bases, still nobody out. Then he struck out the side and went 4 more innings without nothing. It's amazing what he did in that outing alone. He looks like a really good pitcher, like a guy who could be a top 40 starting pitcher even this season. But Skaggs does too.
Yeah, like I said, but the thing with Peralta, though, is that I don't know how much he's going to be able to adjust to get those men on base. And I think we're starting to see that perhaps he's not able to pitch with men on base, and that could be a long-term problem because he's not going to 1-2-3 at every inning.
All right, anything else here that we need to do on this show?
Hey, Eric, big cookout coming July 4th. I really got to impress these in-laws. You know how that goes. Where can I find the best recipes to not make me look, in the words of Bryce Harper, like a clown show, bro?
That's an easy call. Check out ballparkbuns.com/recipes for a ton of great recipe inspiration. We all agree we want to do a show Thursday.
I'll be here.
All right.
Show on Thursday.
I will not. That's on Tristan.
Tristan's coming back, apparently. Okay, but we did hear him earlier in the show anyway. All right, that is all for today. Thank you so much for listening to our show after the long weekend. It is July. Stick with us. We think we'll be doing shows for the rest of the regular season twice a week, and that should be a lot of fun for everybody. Keep you in your races. The Fantasy Football Podcast. Kyle, there was some news there. Maybe you could chime in and tell us what's up with there, because we know a lot of people play fantasy baseball and fantasy football. We're all friends here at ESPN. So what's new with that show, and when are they going to start doing more shows?
Sure. Plenty of crossover, obviously, with the fantasy community. 4 weeks from today, we'll be going live on Twitter. We'll be doing it every day. It'll be 5 days a week. Matthew Fields, Stefania, the crew. I think we're doing it late morning, early afternoon. So you're looking at 11 or 12 on Twitter, and then we'll post the podcast like we always do in the early afternoon.
All right, lots of fantasy football stuff coming to ESPN Fantasy. The draft kit is out. Sleepers and busts coming, mock drafts, you name it. But we'll still keep you up to date with baseball as well. Thanks so much to AJ Mass for filling in. We really appreciate that. You will be hearing from him again as the summer goes on, because Tristan just takes off whenever he wants. Good to see Leo back in the editorial watchdog chair and everybody else. I am Eric. Please enjoy your July 4th and be awesome. Everything is awesome.
Hey, darkness.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at espnradio.com.